you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I am Jason Goff, and I am joined by none other than NBCSportsChicago.com's very own Casey Johnson and our digital content producer extraordinaire. He is Tony Gill. Now, today, it'll be a little bit different on the podcast because I get to sit in the guest seat and listen to Tony moderate the discussion, and I get to fire off a few opinions with my man Casey. So it should be a fun time overall. Coming up on the show, we'll talk about the Bulls so far at the halfway mark, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Kobe White, and all the rest of the things that you love to hear about right here on the Bulls Talk Podcast.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste, filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness, and packaged cold for peak refreshment, because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
They thought they was going to hold me down. They thought they was going to keep Tony off mic.
And for everybody who's wondering, I suggested this only because Tony Gill is far better at leading a podcast than I am. And of course, Casey Johnson loves to talk Bulls in his spare time. That's why we love KC. So, Tony, take it away, brother.
But we got a couple topics here that I think we definitely should get into for this week's episode, for today's episode of this podcast. But I think the number one pressing topic is the effect of the Wendell Carter injury that it's going to have on this team. Now, they've split games so far, you know, with him being out, lost one, won one. Mm-hmm. But what do you guys are expecting now with this extended, you know, out of the lineup Bulls team of Wendell Carter? Jay, let's start with you, and then we'll go to Casey.
He's definitely one of their defensive anchors, and you saw in Daniel Gafford's first game a team take advantage of youth. And Wendell is young too, but he's, you know, been in through a training camp. He's been through an off season. He's been through a year, even though he was hurt last year. He kind of, you know, he knows the lay of the land. He knows what Jim Boylan and his team is trying to do defensively. So when you lose a guy who you've been counting on, you know, obviously your lineup gets a little bit weaker. Guys move up in the rotation. I think the key to Wendell's injury in terms of where the Bulls are defensively is that Wendell is a guy who's, you know, responsible for a lot of their pick and roll coverages and the way they want to do things in terms of blitzing the pick and roll and what Jim Boylan is asking of his big man and his guard when that play happens, and also just being communicative, because he has a different voice than that of Daniel Gafford, and, you know, guys have to get used to that. So Daniel Gafford's a good prospect, a good player. He's a rim runner. He's a dude who likes to run and jump and affect shots. But when the game slows down, I think Wendell Carter Jr. is more ready, obviously, after having a little bit more experience in the NBA than Daniel has. So that's going to show. Casey, you're right there on the court. You're around this team. You see and hear things that we don't get a chance to hear. How do you think Wendell Carter Jr.'s injury will affect this Bulls lineup?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned communication, Jason, because that's the biggest thing that I would point to that you hear consistently from not only coaches but his teammates, is that he's by far the best on-court communicator. And so he may be a young player, but he's not young in terms of defensive IQ. He's always been someone who is looked more mature and advanced than his age at the defensive end, whether it's via that strong communication skills or even things just like, you know, he mastered. I remember talking to Robin Lopez last season about how quickly he mastered the defensive 3-second rule as a 19-year-old rookie, you know, tagging a guy and getting back. And, you know, that's stuff that, you know, Robin said sometimes it takes guys a couple seasons to learn. And he, Wendell, mastered it, you know, in preseason. So I think he's always been advanced and more mature than his age defensively. And then, you know, we've all talked and written and you know, harped on multiple times the defensive rebounding issues with this team, and Wendell, you know, is almost averaging a double-double. So I think it's going to be a huge tax on the Bulls over 4 to 6 weeks. I do think that there may be a slight high end to that estimate. I think the Bulls don't even be asked about the situation. I think there's a chance, and Wendell alluded to this as well, you know, he gets back before the All-Star break. Regardless, it's going to be an extended absence, and I doubt you're going to see Gafford and Cornette play as well as they did in the same game like they did against Detroit.
That Luke Cornette outing just came out of nowhere. And I started the season, like, in the beginning, like, yeah, Luke Cornette, he's going to be a dude. And then he quickly became not a guy and not a guy that should be playing, you know, on most nights. But that last effort against Detroit really showed what, at the top end of what Luke can bring, which he can stretch out defenses at that center position.
Had a couple blocks, too.
Right, yeah. And big guys, they have – some big guys have issues, you know, guarding the three-point line. And he's going to get a lot of those open shots if he maintains that kind of pick-and-pop, you know, mentality. But, man, when they said he's going to be out for as long as he's going to be out, I was like, all right, it's go time. Trade deadline's coming up. Can they kind of hold water before – you know, he gets back, and by hold water, I mean, can they stay within striking distance of that eighth seed while Wendell is out, their defensive anchor, their best defender by far? And I don't know if they can. I don't know if they can for the extended amount of game, and specifically how many games that they have to – that they're going to be playing this month. It's gonna be rough. They're gonna have those outings of Luke Cornette. Those are rare. They can't depend on Luke Cornette to have that every night, in my opinion. And that means a lot of stepping up for Lauri Markkanen, and not just the kind of the lowered bar that we have seemingly given Lauri since he hasn't been playing all that great this year. But I'm talking an uptick in rebounding and points to make up that difference.
Well, I think we saw that in KC. You can speak to it because I think we saw that in Detroit where in the fourth quarter, after Lauri scored 5 straight points, his aggressive nature in chasing down loose balls. I mean, there's been a couple of games here over the last couple of weeks, and the only couple of games that they've won over the last couple of weeks where Lauri has done other things in the fourth quarter, like chasing down loose ball and tapping it back in before Wendell got hurt to Wendell for a game time bucket and those kinds of things. So Lauri is definitely going to be looked to pick up the slack that Wendell Carter Jr. has left behind, and also what the guys can't provide in Luke Cornette and in Daniel Gafford. The onus, and it seems like it's been on him all year, KC, but how much does it ratchet up? And how much does any of this affect him? Because, you know, we get a chance to see him in the post game after you get done answering or asking him questions. But how much, you know, he's an even-keeled guy, sometimes to me, to a fault, where I'd like to see him be upset in certain situations, whether it's being benched for Thad Young early in the year or people questioning his aggressive nature or what should have been his aggressive nature throughout this season. How much does this stuff affect Lauri Markkanen, if any, because you're around him every single night?
I mean, the biggest thing that you sense when you're around Lauri daily is, I mean, I agree with you, Jason. Sometimes it's to a fault. He's a team first guy. He always seeks the team. But the disconnect there is that for the greater good of the team, he needs to be more aggressive. And, you know, I don't know. I think one of the biggest things that has jumped out about this season is you now have to start to question if he has that makeup. You know, I mean, that's to me one of the dominant storylines of the season is does Lauri have the makeup to be to have a little nasty in him, to be as aggressive as he needs to be on a nightly basis. The surprising aspect to me about this season is that beyond the ridiculous statistical numbers that he put up last February when he had that amazing stretch, he had a little nasty to him. He was playing aggressively. He was playing physically. He had a little snarl to him. He was, you know, he had a little swag to him. Mm-hmm. And I have not seen that as consistently this season. So he is a very even-keeled guy. He seeds to a fault, and you know, the Bulls obviously need him to play at a high level and to be aggressive on a nightly basis to get the most out of him and get the most out of their season.
Have you ever seen this happen with a guy? Or, you know, a guy, especially a guy this young that is this injury-free? I don't think that I've ever seen a guy who has been pretty much granted a certain amount of shots by not only an offense but by a franchise and saying, hey, you're one of our top two guys, and a guy who has just not stepped up to be aggressive in the face of opportunity.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a comp from all my years, and the one's not coming immediately.
Right, like a guy who hasn't been hurt, a guy who isn't trying to advance into a new role. I mean, he was the second best player on this team last year, you know, with Zach LaVine being the best player on this team. Like, it's not – the crew is different around him, but the guy that he should follow the lead of isn't any different. So you'd think that those two guys, especially the way they were sitting next to each other at Big Ten the Bulls media day, you'd think that it'd be an easy transition into, okay, now more of the shots are going to come my way now that Otto Porter Jr. is down and all these other things. And meanwhile, you've got a rookie who comes into play where Zach LaVine, more times than not over this last couple of weeks, has been looking towards Coby White to be the guy that is going to be the offensive, I guess, pressure alleviator next to him. And it's, I don't think I've ever seen anything like this.
Yeah, and part of that is because, you know, Coby is, you know, as inconsistent as he's been, is a shot creator, whereas Lowry really, to me, is more of a – he's not a guy who just takes guys off the dribble very often. He did a little bit in that stretch of February last year with that drag step move and that one-step, one-legged fadeaway, but we haven't seen that as consistently this year. It's been more of, you know, cuts in the offense and obviously three-point looks. So it's been a weird season for Lowry. I mean, since December 1st, his numbers have gotten a lot better. But, you know, everything we heard from the franchise, and this, you know, coincides with your point, Jason, you know, all offseason was every move was made. The offseason signings, the roster personnel was structured so that LaVine and Markkanen could be the guys. And LaVine's got no problem taking that and running with it. And Lowry, you know, really, really struggled initially this season. And it's just weird because, you know, he showed that you know, 4 weeks stretch last year, he can do it. But this season, that start, I'm still trying to figure out that start. I've never seen anything like it.
And from my conversations that I have, like, with people, you know, around the team, my conversations, but, like, that's a legitimate, like, concern that they have. Like, how do you grow that out of an athlete? Usually when you say this is our franchise guy, you know, they usually kind of take that on themselves and be like, yeah, okay, let me be more aggressive. I have never seen, like you guys said, an athlete have it, then lose it, and then, like, can't find it. Like, it almost coincides with kind of like what Markel Fultz kind of went through in terms of just the confidence of an athlete just kind of being gone, you know, after seeing hints that they can be, you know, great or all-star level or play at an all-star level, to just lose it just all of a sudden with no apparent reason.
Yeah, but even with Markel, and Casey, you could probably speak to this a little bit better, but even with Markel, you know, there was an injury, so an apparent injury, and there was a whole bunch of stuff swirling around him too in terms of what people were saying behind the scenes. You know, I had somebody who got a GM job actually this year say that they thought that there might have been an accident in an offseason that he never reported. Like, there was a lot of things that had happened over a couple of years when it came to Markel Fultz and the pressure of being that high a pick on a team that was ready to roll. So he just had to settle in, whereas with Lowry, there's been no injury. Right? I mean, he's had bumps and bruises, right? He had the oblique this year and he's at the ankle now. But there hasn't been any major setback physically that you would say, okay, this is why this guy has to take a little bit of time to get back. Only thing that's really changed this year, let's be honest about it, is the propensity of this new offense to have big guys and especially guys like him shoot three-pointers. So, you know, I've talked about him being a path of least resistance kind of guy, and not in a, I mean, it's good and bad that comes with that, but he's a go with the flow kind of dude. And if you've got an offense that's going to find you early on in the shot clock with a shot that you may think that your coach may like, and you don't have to really get engaged other than just pulling up, I think that we're finding out now that maybe, just maybe, there has to be another player on the court who isn't Zach LaVine, who has the ball in his hand, that is going to tell Lowry where he has to be in order to get him going, because sometimes you got to do better for a player than the player wants to do for himself. I think that's where Lowry is caught up right now. Do you think, KC, that if there was a veteran point guard or a person who's been through the fires, that maybe Lowry will be having a better season just because he'd be being told where to be and where he was going to get the ball instead of where the offense dictates where he's going to get it?
I mean, you know, Satoransky isn't the classic break the defense down off the dribble guy, but I mean, I don't think Satoransky is completely to blame for Lowry's problem.
No doubt.
I know it's not what you're asking, but yeah, I mean, would a Chris Paul help Lowry marketing? Of course, but I think that Lowry's struggle this season go beyond that. I mean, that's just, to me, the Bulls not solving the point guard situation is a separate issue. It's mystifying, and we've all tried to figure it out. I do think initially it was a little bit of Lowry kind of losing his way in the system, and not, you know, the system allowing his non-aggressive personality to kind of mesh with the equal opportunity nature of the system, and that being a bad combo. I think there was initially some of that, and then, you know, he also was missing wide open shots. That's well documented. So it's been weird. It's been bad for the Bulls, and you know, it actually leads me to one question. You guys, and look at me taking over the driver's seat.
Ah, look at that. Look at that. Multifaceted KC. And that renegotiation is going to be real.
but you guys mentioned the word playoffs, and I'm actually kind of curious. At what point do we move on from that? I mean,
3 weeks ago.
Yeah, all right, there we go. That was real talk, right? So they're 14-26 as we take this heading into the Boston game.
Right.
We're reaching the season's midway point. They face the easier portion of their schedule. I know the East is awful, but, you know, what is there that you can point to that screams this team's got to run in it? I'm not seeing it, and so I'm just curious where you guys stand on that issue.
No, I mean, I thought there would be a team that would battle for that eighth spot and eventually fall short, and I think that's kind of what's happening here. I mean, they're probably gonna finish 4 or 5 games outside of that eighth spot, you know, the way they are now, and that's on the high side. I mean, you gotta understand, like, a lot of fans, they don't realize – well, I think they realize it, but this is the portion of the year where the injuries start to happen. So all those games that were just straight tricked off in the first 2-3 weeks of the season, where, you know, you get beat twice by an Indiana team that doesn't have 3 of their top rotational players in there. You get beat in the fourth quarter of a Lakers game where the Lakers stars were shutting it down, all but having ice on their knees, and all the other things. I mean, all these games that they just – the Cleveland game is just one of the worst things that I've seen in a long time. I mean, those things, you were supposed to bank those wins so you can be in position and you can withstand a tough stretch of games like they're in now with the injuries they have now. With all that being compounded, I don't see it. I mean, I barely saw it at the beginning of the season. I really, really don't see it now.
I'm here for all the development mode talk now. We noticed that, you know, a month ago, where the narrative started to switch in, you know, their verbiage, specifically with Jim, and what he would say in terms of, you know, I have to develop the bench, or, you know, we're in development, you know, mode. And slowly the playoff rhetoric started to kind of slip away. And that was a month ago. So now with the Wendell injury and the amount of games that he's going to miss, still no real, you know, update on a timetable for Otto. That's two starters that they're not going to have for a large chunk of this year. And that just leaves him including the tougher schedule that is coming up for the Bulls. They're top five in terms of, you know, strength of schedule. In terms of they're gonna be bad because of the amount of good teams that they play against, their record against good teams that they play against. I didn't see it in the beginning of the year, but I gave them an outside shot. I thought the jump to a playoff team was too large at that point. And I don't think they really understood how big of a jump that was at the beginning of the season at Media Day. Like, that 20-plus game wins. No matter what happened that season before, you can blame it on, well, we intentionally held a couple players out just to be on the safe side. But, again, that 20-plus game jump was just too large for me to take at the beginning of the year. And now it's starting to get real, where I think all of the development stuff should be happening in terms of, all right, let's see if Kobe can actually run an offense. Let's see if Daniel Gafford can actually be, you know, a consistent, you know, rim runner and rim protector and can stay out of foul trouble and develop all of those things for this team that they're going to need going into the next season. I don't know if that answers your question, Casey.
I'm being a driver, so it's your turn now, baby.
But Jason, you made a good point in terms of the games that the Bulls have let slip away.
Yeah, late. I said tricked off.
Yeah, tricked off. Yeah, late in games. That's probably the best word for it. But what I did was when I tweeted this out after after the Boston game about defensively, you see the slippage late. In games, and the stats have kind of proven that way if you want to look at defensive rating. Obviously, defensive rating isn't the end-all, be-all, but mm-hmm. it is, you know, a stat that I look at just to gauge defensively where teams are. The Bulls start out in the first quarter, second in the league in defensive rating. The second quarter, they drop to seventh. In the third quarter, they drop to 14th in the league in defensive rating. And then in the fourth quarter, they drop all the way down to 16th in the league in defensive rating. So we all know how the Bulls play defense, their defensive scheme. They like to be really aggressive and do the blitzing thing on the ball handlers on pick and roll. It seems like to me, and I want to definitely get you guys' opinions on it, is teams get used to it, plus the amount of energy that it takes to do that throughout a game seems to wear them down, and teams, they end up picking that apart, leading to open corner threes, open layups, open dunks that other teams get in the fourth quarter, where Bulls team seems to have trouble closing out.
KC?
That's spot on, Tony. That's spot on. And also I would add that teams that are with the ability and the talent and the poise to make multiple reads can pick it apart. It works against the teams that don't want to be there or don't have or have young players mm-hmm. or you know are checked out for the night because they're on a back to back or a, you know they don't do four and fives anymore, but you know five and seven or whatever. It works against the tired teams that are tired mentally that only have to make that aren't interested in making multiple reads. Good teams. Veteran teams, poised teams that want to have the ability to make multiple reads or obviously just have talent can pick it apart. And that speaks to that stat you threw out about the rating declining as the game goes on. I will say, and you guys have heard it, you know, I spoke with Jim Boylan about this again this morning at shoot around, and he's just, you know, he's doubling down on this. He's not going to change. This one of the biggest things he points to as far as his what he feels he's accomplishing in his first season as head coach is he's establishing a style of play regardless of personnel. So you take Wendell Carter Jr. out of there, he admits that Daniel Gafford and Luke Kornet are not as adept at this blitzing scheme where they ask so much of their big. But he wants to have the same system of play. Thad Young, guy who's not taken a lot of three-pointers historically in his career, comes in, signs a free agent contract. He's in that second unit. He's basically playing the same way Lauri Markkanen is playing the four in that second unit. This is what Jim Boylan wants. He wants to establish a style of play, a foundation that no matter the personnel, you plug and play. It's what he said he learned in San Antonio under Greg Popovich. So it's not changing, even if it's not working.
Casey, do we have to look at the roots of this thing and say that Jim Boylan is pretty much implementing a system that he doesn't quite have the players for yet, and that just speaks to the job security that he's going to get a chance to coach the system that he wants to coach with the players that he wants to coach with in the matter of, you know, next year or so?
Are you saying that, like, that speaks to how much security he feels he has?
Yeah, I mean, if you're not going to change, you know, winning be damned sometimes, it seems to me that for whatever reason, the front office has embodied him empowered him and said that, you know, coach your system and we'll figure out, you know, the players that should be here and the players that won't be here in the coming years under that system.
Yeah, I can't speak directly to that. I mean, obviously, we all know he signed the extension. I obviously can't speak to whether or not management is planning any changes regarding Jim in the offseason. I think a lot has to happen between now and then. What I will say is, this to me is more just Jim. This is Jim being a guy who waited 20 years for this chance, and he's going to do it the way he sees it to be right. Critics be damned. Outside criticism be damned. Outside noise be damned. He's gonna do what he believes is right, and what he believes in from having worked for a lot of people who have been successful with a style of play. And look, I mean, the offense is lagging the bottom, you know, five all season. The defense has shown some teeth, but it started to slip a little bit. Now they're playing better teams, and obviously Wendell's injury hurts it. And he's sticking to his guns. So this is his chance, and this is the way he's doing it.
For a guy that now has the security, you know, with the extension, I'm surprised that he, you know, has the sample size and the reasoning to change or at least tweak or modify some things for this team defensively and offensively, but his refusal to, you know, tweak them in a way that would benefit, you know, his players and his team is weird. I think weird is the right word for it. Considering that he's afforded those opportunities to tweak some things, maybe not blitz so often, you know, in the fourth quarter, maybe play a more conservative defense when you have a lead or where you just need to get stops and not trying to create stops. Because in the end, it's the league. You're playing a bunch of pro players, and the more they see something, the more they're going to adapt to it in-game. And the in-game adjustments from Jim has been, in my opinion, has been lacking. That's a big issue for me. It's like, if you are a head coach, show leadership, change, adapt in-game, and do what you have to do to win games instead of sticking hardcore to a philosophy.
Well, I think, though, that he thinks this is the way that they're going to win, and they just have to get through whatever glass ceiling that, you know, that the results have provided.
Who does that, though? Like, I mean, if we look at the top tier coaches in the league, who plays this way? Like,
well,
throughout
play,
a game?
Guys play this way. They just don't have the players. They don't have the same players the Bulls have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because let's face it, the Bulls, there's a lot of fouling that goes on with the Bulls defense. Mm-hmm. And I think that contributes to some of these losses as well, where there's a team that is not aggressive on the offensive end in terms of finishing at the rack and also putting up the amount of three-pointers that they put up. There's a lot of possessions in there that are very empty, and then you double down with that with the amount of free throws that this team gives up a game. I believe the last time I checked was just a week or so ago, they were fifth in terms of free throws against. So a lot of teams are making hay at the free throw line. There's a lot of fouling that goes on. And then on top of it, if this team doesn't shoot above 39-40% from the three-point arc, then offensively there's a struggle. I mean, that's the worst rated offense, if I'm not mistaken, in the league. So
they're like 28th
to 29th,
yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, so there's not a wide margin for error. But when it does come together, I feel like he thinks it's a win for his kind of basketball. It just doesn't happen enough. And KC, do you think we talk about the inventory that has to be taken with this team and with these players in that locker room? Do you think that obviously they haven't won enough? But as far as sticking to the system, understanding the system, at some point, don't you have to pay that rent, which is due to players, which is results and winning or playing time? I mean, you've had already a professional, a veteran gripe about playing time. You haven't had a lot of wins. Like, at what point, how is this locker room still sticking together or staying together?
Yeah, I actually was talking to Thad Young about that this morning at Shoot Around. And I think the sense that I get just being around the team is and you guys are around it too, but since I'm around, I get it from being around it daily, is mm-hmm. these guys like each other and they like being around each other. And I think there's a collective connectivity and a collectiveness amongst themselves, you know. And one thing that started to come out a little bit more as the season's progressing is, you know, you heard this a little bit early, and then when they went 7-7 in December, there was a little bit more positivity about the system and the buy-in of the system. But one thing you're hearing a little bit more that's coming out, and Thad Young said this morning, is, you know, we're playing the way we're being told to play. You know, so it's almost like, all right, you know, this is what the coaches want us to do. And, you know, I think Thad is emblematic of that. This is a guy who has not taken a lot of three-pointers in his career. And he's largely become a perimeter player, you know, offensively for this team. It's not like he's shooting, you know, tons of three-pointers, but he's shooting more than he has historically. And, you know, he was mostly a post and mid-post and back-to-the-basket guy, mid-range guy for the Pacers and elsewhere, but particularly successfully for the Pacers the last three seasons. And I asked him if, you know, he knew if they were going to be playing this style when he signed in free agency, and he said no, which I found a little interesting. But he said, you know, obviously we still sign up because we believe in the vision and the way it was going. So, you know, my sense is the locker room is look, when I know other coaches like to compliment teams and coaches and stuff, but when Rick Carlisle says that's the hardest playing team in the league, it means something because Rick's got some – he's got some cachet in this league. The Bulls do play hard. They just don't play well a lot. And I think the playing hard is a manifestation of how the guys are not completely checked out, because I think they all like each other and they're committed to each other.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, one more thing before we kind of wrap this up. All-Star Game, the second set of returns have come out. And Zach LaVine is still right there fifth in, you know, All-Star voting from fans. And that kind of leads him to believe that I think he may get the nod from the coaches to get into that reserve slot. What does that mean for the Bulls, and what does that mean for Zach LaVine if he has the opportunity to be an All-Star reserve? Casey?
I mean, it means a lot for Zach because he's publicly stated how much he wants it, how much he's worked towards it. I personally don't agree with you. I don't think he's going to get voted in as a coach's reserve. I think if he gets in, it'll be an injury replacement, but we're all obviously just speculating. If he did get in, it would be a validation of, you know, how much he's worked and what he's pointed to as a publicly stated goal. You know, it would mean a little bit for the Bulls because they're great at marketing, right? And if the game's in their building and, you know, the league runs it, they made a big point of getting an All-Star game here, and they can sell Zach as being, you know, in the big boy game and a one-time All-Star and all that stuff. And I'm sure Jim would, you know, point to it as progress for the rebuild, et cetera. So it could be nothing but positive stuff coming out of it. You know, All-Star game, you know, exhibition, league party, whatever you want to call it, you're still considered NBA All-Star. So it would be important for Zach and for the Bulls.
I agree. I think it'll be very important for Zach. I think he's playing like one. I just don't think he will be one because of how little they've won. And his numbers aren't as eye-popping as maybe Bradley Beal's are or some of the other guys who he might be battling with. So, and also, you know, Bradley Beal's got a little bit more tenure and as you mentioned, cachet with others around the league. You know, Zach LaVine's just coming into his own over this last couple of years or so. So I don't think he'll make it unless somebody does get hurt or doesn't decide to play. And I think the noise that he's going to make this year, post-All-Star break, I think is going to speak volumes to a lot of people around the league about, you know, was this all for, you know, the All-Star break, or is he really, really growing as a player? I think he's growing as a player. I think the next level is going to be his playmaking decisions. Because he's got vision and he could pass the ball a little bit. I just think sometimes his decision making is a little problematic. And I think defensively is where he has to pick up his game. Where, you know, he's tried to take the challenge over the last few weeks or so. You've seen some times where he's erred, and you've seen some times where he's played well. You know, and the little things, you know, that are pointed out by not only Chicago media but his coaches. So I think this year is the build up to next year if he can have a similar sort of season, and hopefully the Bulls can be a lot better than they were this year. But I think he's gonna fall short of it this year.
I think it'll hurt him a little bit if he doesn't get it.
Because yeah,
like,
of course.
Yeah, like Casey said, I mean, this was like,
he's
obviously
he's an extremely confident dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first time I ran into Zach LaVine was summer league years ago for NBA Radio, and he sat down with us, and I had never seen
an 18, 19-year-old with that amount of and it's like it's stated confidence, but it's not in your face confidence until you see it out on the floor. But you can tell the way he carried himself. He felt like he was still proving things to people in a place that he felt like he belonged. And obviously the Minnesota situation where he was the third banana and he felt like he was better than both those guys. And, you know, Zach made no bones about it. Now he's got his own team. He's got his own franchise and he's doing a lot of losing. So obviously that's being put on his shoulders. I think that there are still some things that he has to refine, even like some of the little things where, you know, he doesn't always understands that everybody's always looking at him body language wise and how he reacts to certain things, whether it be turnovers or his teammates not doing
boxing out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But just, you know, things that his teammates are doing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like he I think he's still growing into becoming a leader and a well-rounded player at 24. So I think he'd be hurt because he's an extremely confident dude. But at the same time, you'll find out, you know, your first, second, and third pieces of adversity in your career kind of make who you are. And he's been traded before his rookie deal was up. You know, that's kind of a wake-up call to a lot of dudes. So I think he's taking those steps, those steps that he needs to take to progress and to be an all-star. But got to affect winning more, man. Yeah, you know, brass tacks is how much are you winning? Draymond Green is nobody's all-star if he's on any other team besides the Golden State Warriors. But he affected winning on a championship and historic dynamic team. So I think that's the next step is if Zach can average 24 points a game and this team is 500, then we're talking about an all-star. But since he's not, you know, he's not on a team that's winning the way they should or the way a lot of people thought they would, a little bit more than they thought they would, then this is going to have to be his lot in life and he's going to have to buy a ticket to that game.
Yeah, if he doesn't get in, like, does he participate in the dunk contest, Casey?
I mean, he basically made it clear he's going to try to do something that weekend. So, I mean, to me, and look, he's obviously debating the thought process and he's made it clear that if he gets in the big boy game, those other decisions are going to be easy for him. I think there's a chance that if he gets in the big boy game, he might do everything if he's invited to the three-point contest. But my takeaway from the last time I checked in with him on it was he definitely wants to be in the three-point contest. The dunk contest, I think he'll do it. He might do it, but I think there's more allure to him to winning the three-point contest. The thing with the dunk contest to me is there's only one place for him to go, and that's down. I mean, he's won it twice with some of the most spectacular dunks of all time. There's going to be so much pressure on him. And this, I actually haven't even asked him this. This is just popping into my head right now. I actually think if guys like Zion Williamson was in the dunk contest, Aaron Gordon was in the dunk contest, that might pique his interest more. But, yeah. You know, when I checked in with him last night, it was about Dwight Howard and maybe Ja Morant. You know, he was like, you know, whatever. I mean, he wasn't like saying like that, but that was – it was more like, you know, what do I have to prove in that event? I mean, I think he's torn on it. He may know and just not be telling us, but I do know there is 100% appeal to him to be the first to win both the dunk contest and the three-point contest.
Yeah, Derrick Jones is not going to get him out of bed. All right, Casey, thank you so much, man. We appreciate you. We'll continue to read your stuff on NBCSportsChicago.com. We hope you enjoy the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning. We will talk to you on Friday right here on the Bulls Talk podcast.